VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And right off the top, I'm going to tell everybody that we've had multiple reports so far this morning that the internet version of this broadcast is not doing well. So if you have an actual radio and can tune it to 101.1, you will get a much better version. If you're out of the reach of that, to some directions, you can do it on 600 AM. Other directions, you're going to have to try to figure out what we're saying through being garbled. So we apologize for that, and we've notified the tech people. We'll see what happens. It's not in our control. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, all the regulars. We appreciate you being here all the time. And if you're new to the show, just discovered it, or whether found it by accident or somebody told you about it, well, try to stick around for the hour. You will definitely learn something. That is something that's kind of a given around here. Won't always tell you it'll be useful, but it should at least be interesting. And man, there are a lot of interesting things going on right now. This is almost too easy doing a show in an environment like this.
There is a lot to talk about.
There really, really is. I can't wait. And we will get into it after talking about its effect on the market, which has been that good this week. Where the market's in kind of a range trading situation, just waiting for something to define itself, and it's nothing I'm worried about in particular. Just annoyed, not really worried. Big difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of cause for concern, uncertainty, yeah. Whatever you want to call it.
No doubt about it.
There's a lot going on right now. Then not much of it is really positive, although there are positive things. They're not making the headlines.
Right. But we also will have a trivia question, as usual, after the break. And before we get Adam digging into the market this week, I want to wish everybody a happy Easter, and to our excellent Jewish friends, a happy Passover.
Yep.
Happens to be one of the years where they overlap, which is kind of fun. Everybody should be in a pretty good mood that way. All right, this week in the market, you heard Howard say, if you've carried over, that we had some thumbs down on it, and they're just... doesn't seem to be any direction, as I said. It's floating around. I was hoping, because it was a short week, that everybody would forget that Friday it was closed, because that's when it's been punishing us lately. But they simply moved Friday into Thursday and called it a week.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of traders do not want to hold anything over the weekend recently. They're on Friday afternoons have been, or Thursday afternoon in this case, has been particularly notably heavy on the selling. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. The market was lower this week. It's still well above the lows set in the first quarter of this year. Definitely a lot of uncertainty. The Ukraine situation is far from resolved, and that there's headlines about that every day. Inflation's hitting a 40-year high. Fed promising a lot of interest rate hikes, and probably sooner rather than later. So you really can't blame traders for feeling a bit cautious about the market. So far in April, that's as has been the trend all year, the Nasdaq's taking the brunt of the losses. It's down 6.1%. This is due to interest rate sensitivity in growth stocks, which the Nasdaq is full of. The S&P is down 3% this month, while the Dow has held up much better. It's down just 0.7%. So people, if they're holding anything, it looks to be large cap dividend stocks for the most part, and selling off their growth stocks. Despite those weak readings on the S&P, there's some sectors that are positive in April. Energy is up 5.2. Consumer staples are up 4.4%, utilities up 2.6%, and healthcare is also up 1.9%.
It's nice to hear from them again.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a little sluggish.
You'll notice the trend there. Most of those are defensive sectors, mm-hmm. so that's something that we'll get into a little bit more later. Technology's been the big loser, down 6.8%. Surprisingly, there are more stocks than normal in the S&P 500, hitting 52 weeks highs during this period, and that kind of goes counterintuitive.
It does.
But the normal rate is for about 1.6% of stocks in the S&P 500 to be at their 52-week high. Last Friday, we saw a rate of 4.5%, so three times what the average or the historical norm is, so very high.
This is good news.
Yeah, and most of them were in those four sectors I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But that is a positive sign for the market. Most of those stocks, again, fall into that defensive category, so people are definitely trading in a way that showing that they're worried about the overall market.
Yeah, you can see that in the sentiment numbers too.
It's so high actually that the defensive sectors are trading around a 10-year high in terms of valuation. So that if that puts it in perspective, mm-hmm. that has not been where people have been putting money in the last 10 years, and now they are. Interest rates climbed again this week, with the 10-year Treasury ending the week over 2.8%. This also pushed the 30-year mortgage rate over 5% for the first time since 2011. So it's been quite a while since we've seen a 5% mortgage. That seems high to a lot of people. It's actually a fairly low historical rate. If you haven't refinanced your house, though, in the last few years, you probably have missed your window and are not going to get a good deal by doing that today.
No, unless you've got a really old one where it's up 7, 8, 9, it's not going to work. Or as they were talking about in the prior show too, there, depending on your conditions personally, there are still some really good deals on the adjustable rates out there.
Yeah, and Howard and Angela were talking about that, and you can get a 10-year ARM, and that is a substantial period
of time.
It is. So if you can lock that in the 3% range, that could be something to take mm-hmm. a look at.
Yeah, in the financial world, 10 years is forever doubled.
Yeah, and for most people, 10 years of living somewhere, a lot of people move houses every 7, 8 years, even less. So
that number's been creeping up a bit, but still 10 is kind of the outside reach. So if you're thinking about it and you think you need a little better interest rate, don't hesitate to look into that 10-year.
Yeah, and if you do a 10-year and you end up staying, you could always look at a refi into a 15- sure. or 20-year mortgage with a fixed rate yep. At the end of that. So there's a lot of options there. Inflation data came in hot this week, as it has been the past year. CPI rose 0.3%, which was actually lower than expectations of 0.5%, so a little bit of silver lining there. Much of the inflation was due to oil and gas prices, and to no one's surprise, they were up 20% in March. Ouch. Used auto prices went the other way, dropping 4% in March. That was actually down more than expected. So that's one area I've been saying will drop.
Yes.
So there are prices that are going up that are not going to come back down, like food and rents most likely. But used autos, that was a part-time or a one-time thing caused by the lack of semiconductors in the market. There weren't enough new cars available, so people were buying used, which inflated the price. That's just how that works, but that's going to reverse. Rent is one of the major drivers of inflation, but even that is showing some signs of backlog. And that's really loud. The median asking rents actually came down last month. It was that's the first time we've seen that in quite a while. And what an asking rent is just what it sounds like. It's what the landlord puts the rent out there. It's not necessarily what someone will pay, because you can negotiate with rents. A lot of people don't know that, but if you see something for $2,000 a month, you could offer $1,800 and you might get it at that price.
Yeah.
Maybe not in this market, but historically.
Doesn't cost you anything to ask.
Yeah.
There's a lot that people can do for themselves, and that's one of the things we like to do here is help people understand that you're not always just a pawn. There are things that you can actually do to improve your own personal situation. Well, we've got a lot more to do after the break, so we will be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales of First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Well, we've been talking a lot, and we're not alone, about inflation, because it's the topic on everyone's mind, even more so than Ukraine and some other issues of the day. And along with inflation of just pure price rising magnitude, there is a concept that has come back called shrinkflation. And we see it a lot at the grocery store where the price may or may not go up, but the package is smaller and contains less, or it's the same size and still contains less. There's a lot of ways to do this, but it's a way of essentially raising the price of goods. I want to know, inflation, shrinkflation is not new, by the way. In fact, it's several decades old. I want to know what the origin of shrinkflation was. And there was something that happened that led to the concept of shrinkflation. See if you can come up with it. And I'll tell you right now that my crack research department figured it out immediately.
I did not.
She has the advantage of a few more years
on
you.
Yeah, that is true.
It helps to have been around during the time things happened to remember them.
My favorite recent example of shrinkflation is Dunkin' Donuts. If you go to a Dunkin' Donuts and buy coffee, if you get an extra large like I usually do, mm-hmm. and you grab the cup, everything looks exactly like it used to. If you take your finger and put it in the bottom of the cup, you will find that the bottom of that cup is about an inch and a half from where the bottom actually should be. They have moved the bottom up on the cup, so they're pouring less coffee into an extra large than they used to. It really ticked me off.
That's a good one. By the way, I was just notified that the internet reception is much better now.
Hopefully.
So if you switched over to a radio or something, or if you were just kind of getting it garbled through, we have reason to believe that it's improved. And since we gave out the trivia during the improved part, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. Anyways, I wanted to wrap up with inflation. The PPI report also came out this week, and it showed slowing down it showed the fastest month-over-month and year-over-year increases on record.
Right.
Now, granted, that report only goes back to 2009, so it's not really saying the biggest on record in a period of almost no inflation is not really saying all that much. So,
that is true.
But it's not great. The truck transportation costs were up 7% month-over-month. Energy was the main culprit in that one, though. And because of that transportation cost, I saw an article saying that Walmart is now paying their truck drivers six-figure incomes. You can make $100,000 driving a truck for Walmart.
Yeah, starting wages are between $85,000 and $100,000. That's really
crazy.
Something. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. 73 oil embargo. I lived through it. I was in law school.
Uh-huh.
I watched the Hershey bar shrink from airplane wing size down to three finger size.
Well put.
Playboy magazine went up, doubled. Beer went from my high school six pack of Budweiser was $1.25.
Yeah.
And I just looked up my high school dollar the other day, and it takes $6.84 to equal that dollar from high school.
Wow.
I support 16 Navy installations throughout the Southeast in 12 states, and most of the folks that I support are younger because I'm an old guy. I'm almost as old as your dad there, Adam. I don't brag about it, though.
Well, you should. You're still alive.
Yeah, I'm still kicking. But anyway, none of them have seen it. They have no idea, and they don't understand it's the silent killer of everything.
Right.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Everything you do, everything you touch, everything you think about doing, everything you want to do, everything you used to do.
Yep,
it's a killer.
Right.
And there's only one reason we have it, and I'll let you guys explain that.
Well, there is. Well, we have a lot to say about that. But as far as the answer to the trivia, it predates the oil embargo by a few years. So the question's still out there, and I'll get to that by the end of the show. But
okay, thanks, guys. That's when I saw it. I probably didn't have any money in 68, so
well, that you know, that's kind of like the market crashes back in the 80s and such. And they hurt some people really badly, but not me. I didn't have two nickels to rub together. So,
Yeah, well, same thing. If something pulls back now, doesn't make any difference to me. It just means I buy more next month. I get more shares.
Yeah, exactly, that's right.
That's the best way to look at it.
Love it. Thanks for the call. We will be talking more about inflation and shrinkflation and all that stuff naturally for weeks.
At some time, Adam, I asked you earlier if you do a session on the Fed and what really happens, how banking really works. And when they say they're printing money, what they're doing, because a lot of people have no clue what that means. I'm not sure I have it. I understand the principle, and every country in the world, in the history of the world, has inflated their currency, and that's what they're doing. But that'd be a great one for people to hear.
Yeah, okay, we'll talk about that today. I've got a thing I'm about to read from some very, very intelligent researchers, and they they sound an awful lot like one of the hosts in this room. You'll
see
that.
They sound like Marcus Aurelius.
I'm just
he redid the currency in ancient Rome. He's the one that stopped the inflation on it and said, "We're going to fix it."
Mugabe must have read all about it.
Some of my favorite methods of my favorite methods of curbing inflation include just lopping some zeros off of your currency, and they do that in South America a lot, Venezuela,
and Mugabe.
Africa.
Just if a billion was too much, you just take six
and large
nine.
Instead of small.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, we got a lot to
and
say about all of that.
People don't think they can put an asset tax on, not an income tax, but an asset tax. Just look at Malta and Greece 10 years ago; they whacked them. They whacked everybody that had any money at all.
Yeah, and then look at them now. Did it cure anything? Yeah.
I'm on your team on that.
Does it ever? Yeah.
It never does. They're doing the same old thing, the same old way. You finish the sentence just like that.
Yeah, I think.
Hey, I talked to my guys at, my wife's got a SEP, and she was having trouble figuring out what to put in. The account gave her one number, and we couldn't figure if we contributed the year before. Mm-hmm. I don't run it. I run all the other stuff, but I leave her SEP alone. That's her deal. Mm-hmm. And so I had to call Vanguard, and the guy said, "Do you manage your own money?" Yep. After we talked for a while, he was just, I think they do that. They kind of survey. I said, "Yeah." He said, "How'd you figure out to diversify your portfolio like this?" And I said, "History."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, you're pretty accurate." And he said, "I think you're in a good place." I didn't ask him for any advice. He volunteered it.
That's
good.
Interesting.
It is a good thing.
Isn't it?
There are good people in the business.
I'm interested to see what your safe sectors. I missed it because I was out taking care of the dog.
I have them right here if you want to know. The defensive sectors are consumer staples, utilities, and healthcare. And all three of those are up this year.
I don't have any healthcare. I got the other two. That's where I moved.
Well, until lately, that's been a good idea.
Yeah, healthcare has been going the wrong direction up until April. So that hasn't been a bad thing to be out of.
No, and it's always a little riskier, especially if you get into the far side of that with the biotechs and that kind of thing. Then they're really volatile. But it's not a bad place if you stick to a small percentage and starting at a time like now when they're beat up. So just something to consider.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done. I don't like to move. I hate to move. It makes me afraid that I'm going to make an error. Mm-hmm. But when I do it, it's done.
Yeah. Good point.
That's what we're trying to do,
Frank,
as well.
Hank, you told me, when Hank was around, Papa Van Wee told me he didn't like, I can't remember what it was. It was one of my mutual funds, and I left it, and it still sucks.
Well, good.
You had me holding my breath for that answer.
No, you were right. Yeah, but it wasn't a lot. It was like, half a percent of my portfolio or something. I think it was a contrarian play. It was interesting. You guys got a good show. You do a good job.
Thank you so
appreciate
much.
It, Dave.
Happy Easter.
Yep, bye.
I think my favorite stat around the Fed and printing money right now is that the monetary supply is up 40% since COVID. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, 40% of the money in this country has been printed, I use that term in air quotes, in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to talk about inflation, the discussion is over.
Yeah, that's why.
You can talk a lot more, but you just explained it.
Sure.
Period.
And, I mean, it's just terrible monetary policy to increase the supply that quickly in that short amount of time, and then wonder why we're in a hyperinflationary environment.
Well, modern monetary theory says that you cannot go bankrupt as a country if you own the printing press.
Right, and that there that government money actually increases the value of that in the economy is higher than it is in the private sector. And so the more government programs you put in place, the better off you'll be. I think none of us at this radio program believe in modern monetary theory, by the way, but that is part of their theory. And I don't see how that could be correct on any level.
It's difficult for me to sit here in the year 2022 and understand that there are still Keynesians around and that they have infiltrated government at all levels.
Yeah.
I do not get it.
I mean, Washington is full of them right now.
He even contradicted himself in his own works. Now, how can people worship this guy? I got a great quote for you. Dave will love this one. A von Hayek quote, "If socialists understood economics, they wouldn't be socialists." So on that happy note, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I want to read to you briefly from our great gurus that we actually pay money to because they are the best anywhere about all kinds of market and monetary things, and see if it doesn't remind you of the guy talking right now when you hear these words. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay some bills and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A trivia question is still open. What event, and I'm going to give you a little more here, that goes back to the 60s was the origin of an application, first application of shrinkflation, both the term and the practice. And I think you'll love it when you get it. Adam has a couple more points on the market wrap, and then I'm going to move on and talk about the Fed a little bit.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that the S&P 500 is sitting just 7.5% off an all-time high that was set January 3rd of this year, surprisingly. Yet, investor sentiment continues to plummet. In fact, it hit the lowest level since 1992 this week. Bullish sentiment sits at 15.8%.
Unheard of.
That level was not reached during the Great Recession, the tech bubble, or the pandemic. So the good news is, when sentiment has fallen this far in the past, it has preceded some of the strongest and most consistently positive market returns in history. So we always say that investor sentiment is a contrarian indicator. So when bullish sentiment is low and bearish sentiment is high, that is typically when we see the best returns in the market. And right now, it's so low on the bullish side that it is signaling that we may be in for some really strong market returns. Now, when they come, we don't know.
But remember, April's historically a great month in the market.
It is. It's one of the more positive months of the year.
Will it turn in the next couple of weeks?
Don't know.
I'll tell you in May.
Yep.
And but not before.
Isn't that crazy that we're 7.5% off an all-time high right now?
Yeah, that's it.
It doesn't seem like that.
It doesn't feel like it.
No.
It's absolutely crazy. All right, about the Fed, some things. First off, thanks to the Senate for, I pushed her name out of my mind already, but this uber-liberal, un-everything, including qualified candidate. Biden puts these people up here. I don't know where the heck he finds these people. They're like from the moon or Mars or something. They're so crazy. So they actually put so much pressure on her, she withdrew, and he came up with a new nominee. Guy's name is Barr. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss.
Yep.
And I just can't figure it out. Or maybe he just can't figure it out. Maybe we can get rid of this one too, but he's got a lot of credentials. There's an old saying, and it's so old that I made it up, and it says, in Washington, D.C., you are rewarded for the jobs you've held, not for the job you did.
That's true.
Yep. If you got a resume, you can get any job you want, no matter how unqualified you might be. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as usual.
Thanks so much.
I was going to take a shot at the trivia question and maybe make a comment also, if I could.
Absolutely.
Well, first things first, I would say it was the end of the World War II, with all the men returning home and getting jobs and spending money.
Well, that created a lot of things, including me, but that wasn't the answer to the question.
It also created me. I'm born in 53, so I'm one of the baby boomers also.
Yep. Yeah, most of the world's greatest people were born in June of 1950, and you're right behind.
Okay.
That's just
my
personal...
brother was born in July of 50, so okay. he's right there with you.
Personal sentiment, that's all. Selfish as usual. Well, what's your comment?
I want to ask about these grading systems. You know, I don't know how many there are, and I don't even know these companies' names. Like recently, Barclay downgraded AMD, mm-hmm. and the stock went down 10% in 2 days. And, I mean, the only Barclay I know is Charles Barclay.
I'd rather listen to him than Barclays Bank, believe me.
You know, who are these people? And is it one guy at the company, or is it a team? I mean, you know, they have so much power that it's incredible. I mean, they upgrade something, and it goes up.
They're called
exponentially,
the term in quotes is the analysts.
Yep,
those guys.
Yeah, they're typically MBAs from good, expensive schools that work at investment banks like Barclays and many others, Goldman, J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm. Do they ever get anything right?
Not usually. But they.
No.
What is useful about analysts is that you can look at a consensus of what they all think, and they won't even get that's never right either. But it gives you an indication of what Wall Street is thinking about a particular company, and that's the extent of which I use them at
let's,
all.
Let's apply this to inflation for a moment. From 2020 to now, which is a fair number of months, right? The predictions of inflation have been lower than the actual inflation came in every month except three. So that's a pretty poor record. They have no idea what's coming. They yep. don't have any good, any economic theories for it. I have a better gauge of inflation than they do. I find it at Publix. I just walk around Publix and look at prices, and I'll tell you exactly how much inflation is and is going to be. It's just that simple. You pass a gas pump, you see it. Real-world experience is a heck of a lot better than where these guys live. I can't figure out where they hang out.
But they do spend a lot of time studying the company that they are responsible for. And so they listen to all of the calls that the mm-hmm. management teams make, and so that is their job, is just to follow a group of companies and then give their opinion on them, and for what it's worth, which isn't really that much, but it is, they probably know the companies better than anyone else who doesn't work for the company.
Yeah, the bottom line is, an expert is someone who will listen to you. Or an expert is someone that you can make someone listen to you and quote your name, then you're an expert. So it isn't an earned thing, except, as Adam said, it does take a long time to get a job like that, unlike being the Secretary of Defense or something, which seems to go to mindless people who think equity is the answer to safety. But I digress.
Or the Vice President.
Yeah, well, there's a better one yet.
True.
And we don't like her in California. You take her. They wanted her out. What can you say? That's it.
But, not to beat a dead horse, but like, you know, one analyst will come up with a downgrade on AMD. What about all these other guys? You know, the Credit Suisse's and the J.P. Morgan's and the, you know, nobody else thought the stock should be, you know, downgraded except this one person.
Yeah.
It seems like if you're on the same page, everybody would be downgrading it. You know, the only time you see that is when the stock misses its earnings and it's down 8% in after hours trading.
Right.
The next day, three people downgrade the stock.
Exactly.
Well, boy,
yeah.
I think I could figure that one out.
Yep, pretty good.
That was rocket science.
You've just described one of the major reasons that we do not consider ourselves stock pickers. It's a real frustrating vocation or avocation or whatever you're using it for. Yeah, might be kind of fun once in a while, but I certainly wouldn't put my long-term money on it. That's
right, right. So anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. And
I'm glad you did.
Thanks again for taking my call, and always a pleasure listening to you guys. You get very informative and very entertaining.
Thanks so much. Happy Easter.
All right.
All right, you got anything else you want to
finish? No, that was the only thing I wanted to talk about.
In regard to the Fed, these are from the very best analysts that we can find. If we could find one better, we'd pay them. But it says, everyone knows that the FOMC, that's the Fed Open Market Committee, is going to hike rates considerably in the next several months. The only question is by how much? At this point, you have to ask what they're waiting for. Flipping the script, rewind back to March 2020 when the economy came to a standstill and credit markets dried up. Imagine if the Fed said something along the lines of, quote, the state of the economy warrants much lower rates. Therefore, over the next several months, we will gradually lower rates. Uh-huh. Well, look now. The FOMC is basically saying something similar, but in the opposite direction. If the economy warrants higher interest rates, what are they waiting for? Sure, there may be short-term pain, but markets would adjust. By taking a gradual approach and moving at a snail's pace, the Fed isn't doing the markets or the economy any real favors, as it creates a state of limbo where decisions get put on hold. Who said that last week?
I don't know. I don't remember that.
I remember. Most people remember. I can't explain it, folks. I just cannot explain what goes on in D.C., but I'll tell you another real quick one here. Noted senator and economist Elizabeth Warren accused the energy companies of playing this game. Let's just add $1 billion to our costs to expand our profit. That was about 3 weeks ago, and I am not making this up. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we still have the trivia question open. We've had a couple of fabulous guesses on it. But what event happened in the 60s that was the first known use of the word shrinkflation and the application that caused it? And like I said, we've had some good guesses. All right, if this is April 16th, and my Apple Watch says it is, how come it hasn't been tax day yet? It hasn't. Tax day this year because of the weekend, of course. But more than that, because D.C. observes Emancipation Day, which is the day that Abraham Lincoln signed the emancipation of the slaves in the District of Columbia. It was a few months later, 8 months later, before the entire country proclamation was signed. So Emancipation Day means that when it falls on Saturday, it's celebrated on Friday, and Friday became April 15th, and they were closed, so they put it off till Monday. But, of course, we're not done there either. Residents in Maine and Massachusetts have till the 19th because they observe Patriots Day to commemorate the Battle of Lexington and Concord in the Revolutionary War. Okay. But the actual anniversary of those battles falls on April 19th, but both states observe the holiday on the third Monday in April.
Of course.
Complicated yet?
Yeah.
Anyway, then there's some victims of wildfire and things like that in Colorado, Tennessee, Washington, and Puerto Rico that may get an extension on their returns if they're in the right zip code, basically. And then, of course, there's all the requested exemptions where they give you, if you file the right form, they give you to October 17th. And there's just all kinds of ways that this might happen. But my favorite, there's some states that have the regular federal day for their tax filing too, but others have their own tax filing date, like April 30th for Iowa and Delaware, May 1st for Virginia. But my favorite date is in Alaska, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming, and Florida, where there's no such thing,
mm-hmm.
because there's no state tax. That sounds like a winner in my book. It's Stan Evans. I told Adam, I don't even know who he was, but another great quote I found. Any country that can land a man on the moon can abolish the income tax. Ta-dum. What do you think? All right. You got any place you want to go, or shall I dig into a couple other little goodies?
The only other thing I prepared, I probably don't have enough time to do, so take it away.
All right. Well, you may have heard lately that for the second year in a row, American life expectancy fell. Now, this is very interesting to me. It fell in the COVID year in 2020, mm-hmm. and a lot of that was the pure statistics of the people who died from COVID. But it's also related to things like drug overdoses. The fentanyl deaths are skyrocketing, and they're hitting people younger and younger. But this past one, you would think, at least I would think, that it would hit, you know, the old headline, women and minorities hit hardest. Who was hit hardest in 2021 and the life expectancy decrease was white males.
Yeah, probably young white males.
Uh-huh. And I found that kind of interesting because somehow the minority population seems to have survived this problem a lot better than one would think just based on economic status and overall health. So I was very intrigued to see this. You'll never see the headline that says life expectancy decreases, white males hit hardest.
No, that's not what I've seen.
Doesn't fit the narrative very well. But it is true, and we could talk here forever about the problem with the border and the fentanyl and all that stuff and how easily solvable it is. It's a sad commentary on what goes on in D.C., that's for sure. Now, speaking of sad commentaries, I've been railing against the concept of FIRE. That's the financial independence, retire early crowd. And I haven't really dug into it as much as I want to, and I will not this week get into it very much further either. But it's kind of relating to an article I saw this morning that really upsets me. It says, retirees taking lump sum payouts are depleting them faster. So if you get to the end of the line and you're retiring and you have either sometimes it's a traditional pension plan that's been frozen or whatever, you could opt for a lifetime of payments or you can opt for a lump sum. And a lot of our business is rolling these things over lump sum wise to roll over IRAs and then managing them for a lifetime of income and hopefully growth along the way too. But this trend that started out small-ish, about in 2017, about 20% of the retirees that took the lump sum did this. It's now up to 34%. And what am I talking about? They are taking large withdrawals upon within the first year of turning their money into a lump sum. Well, they are doing things like buying a car, taking a major vacation, buying a home, things like that, with their retirement funds. Can you imagine what that would do to a 4% withdrawal rate plan?
Blow it up.
It's a guarantee of failure mm-hmm. to do that. You have to plan for your major purchases aside from planning your lifetime income. And apparently there are a lot of people who are not doing this. I don't understand it. They're either getting bad advice, not from us, because we tell them, no, don't do that. But something is wrong with the mentality of the country. And I don't know if I can find it the first year, but there is a problem that's cropping up that's been identified by Lawrence Kotlikoff. And I had it. I'm not sure I have it now. But I'm going to be talking about it and his work next week quite a bit. And he's very concerned because our investors now and future retirees and to a large extent are retirees that are just kind of in the process of hanging it up. They're living crazy, as he puts it, we're living beyond our means. Houses are too big. Cars are too nice. Too many payments. Too many different forms of debt. He even rails against the home mortgage. And I'm kind of on the fence on that one. If you're going to have any debt and it's your home mortgage, well, if that's how you pay your rent, basically, and you're paying it to yourself, essentially, by going through the home mortgage, I have less of a problem with that. But none of those things together, those are lifestyle issues, hit me as hard, I guess, as this. The number is up now, recently, to 79% made at least one major purchase. And I can't understand it. I can't wrap my brain around that when you take a lump sum payment.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. And those lump sum payments are pre-tax. So yeah. In order to buy a $60,000 car with your retirement savings, it's actually going to cost you, I don't know, $75,000,
$80,000? Yeah. This is Financial Education Month. There's a lot of that that needs to be done yet.
Yeah.
So I'm just bringing that up and kind of preparing the way for next week when I really want to concentrate on that kind of thing as it pertains to individual financial security and planning for same. Oh, well, let's do something later.
Okay.
Everybody knows our personal Jacksonville's own warrior for things like saving money, Clark Howard, consumer warrior. Clark is a wealth of wonderful information and a lot of great concepts. This one caught my eye from Clark this week. It said, actually caught my wife's eye and she sent it to me, so congratulations where it is deserved. Do not give your Social Security number at these places. And these are things I honestly never would have thought of. Universities and colleges. Banking and financial institutions. We'll come back to that one. Hospitals, state governments, local governments, federal governments, medical business, nonprofit organizations, technology companies, health insurers, and medical offices. You can't get around the banking and financial, but he says use a dummy. Instead of the first three numbers, use zeros, and you'll usually get through with what you want to do, and then it won't be out there in the public. Brilliant, huh? Never would have thought of it. Back in the 60s, we used vending machines with real coins, and they were not programmable, they were not electronic. All they could do was take your coins. When things started to get expensive and passed over the dollar mark, rather than redoing all of the vending machines in the country, they simply shrunk the packages, giving rise to the term and the practice of shrinkflation. So blame the vending machines pre-electronic. Nowadays, you can put in a credit card and get it. It's so easy. More next week. Thanks for listening. We'll be back same time. This is the VanWee Financial Hour.